Welcome to The Magnificent Midlife Woman. Awaken your spirit, heal your body, and live your best life. I'm your host, Sherry Clark, and I'm so glad you're here. This interview series is truly all about you. It's your time to relax and care for yourself. The next 30 minutes might just be life-changing, with fresh insights and practical tips you can use right away. Now let's get started with today's special guest. Maybe you just think you're an ungrateful person. You have a solid relationship, fulfilling career, a good life. But underneath the surface, there's still this unshakable feeling of sadness. Maybe you've tried meds and they work, but the side effects are troublesome. Maybe the meds stopped working. Maybe you feel there isn't even a point to trying to figure it out anymore. Our guest today is Martha Rhodes. After battling major depressive disorder and trying countless treatments for many years, it seemed nothing could alleviate the depression she felt on a daily basis. Her treatment-resistant depression landed her in the ER, where thankfully she recovered from her self-inflicted alcohol and Xanax overdose. Finally, a relative told her about TMS therapy. It was her saving grace. The therapy provided Martha such relief that she has made a second career as a TMS patient advocate, promoting the treatment and sharing her incredible story with others across the country. If you are lost and confused as to how to help yourself or a loved one manage life with depression, please stay right here. You'll learn about the reality of living a chronic illness called major depressive disorder and how important it is to accept that it is a real physical disability. Martha, welcome.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Martha, you've referred to clinical depression as a medical condition rather than just another mental health issue. Why make the distinction?
Well, first of all, I wish that the world would stop calling using the term mental illness when in fact it's brain illness. The brain is diseased. It's not doing its job. And the job is to fire off and pick up neurotransmitters within the neuron, between the neurons within the brain. And when that's not happening, all kinds of behavioral disorders occur. Mine happened to be treatment resistant depression, but and there's usually a companion illness that goes with it. For example, OCD and PTSD, depression and anxiety. It's usually not just one, but in the meantime, the term mental illness, I would really love to see changed to brain illness, because the brain is ill, and that is a medical, physical condition.
Makes perfect sense. Thank you for clarifying. What are the dangers of undiagnosed or untreated refractory depression, which is, you've shared with me, treatment-resistant depression? Can you talk about that?
Yes. First of all, it's not always recognized by psychiatrists, and certainly not by patients, myself included. I was taking that morning happy pill thinking it was doing its job. In the meantime, no doctor that I went to was able to tell me, well, wait a minute, you're on your sixth antidepressant and it's not working. Maybe we should look a little further here. So I became my own judge, jury, and executioner, because I was taking this pill and I had the belief that it was doing its job, when in fact it wasn't. I was not metabolizing the antidepressant medication. And that's what led to my suicide attempt. And I'm very lucky because I survived it. But I'm also very blessed that I was able to understand that I wasn't a failure. The medications weren't even a failure. They just didn't work for me. And so that's why I had to find an alternative. And I call it a tool, because there are several tools in the psychiatrist's toolkit that they can use to help a patient get relief from refractory depression, which, by the way, in the Bible that the psychiatrists use to diagnose patients. It's called the DSM-5. And that Bible has, in fact, a diagnosis, a bona fide diagnosis called major depressive disorder treatment resistant.
So it exists. It's just a matter of getting the proper diagnosis.
Getting the proper diagnosis. And actually, this is why I'm so grateful to be having this conversation with you, Sherry. Creating an awareness about it. I mean, I'd never even heard of it, nor did a lot of people. And the more I talk to, you know, do presentations and talk to people, the more they're going, wow, I never knew that was a problem, that existed. So shedding light on the fact that there is this diagnosis, treatment-resistant depression, also known as refractory depression, and that there is a therapy for it. So there's more than one therapy for it, is really, really important. And that's really where I like to place my focus when I'm sharing my story.
Makes sense. So when you started a therapy called TMS, just start by telling us a little bit about that and maybe why you started that.
Okay. TMS, a lot of people can't even remember those three little letters. It stands for T, transcranial, M, magnetic, S, stimulation, transcranial magnetic stimulation. TMS, I say it rhymes with PMS, and a lot of times people can remember it that way. But in the meantime, what it is, it's based on a thing called science called Faraday's Law. And that it states that if a magnetic pulse comes in contact with matter, then a little spark of electricity is created. So the coil that delivers this magnetic pulse to the left prefrontal cortex of the brain, which is where depression and all that executive function occurs, magnetic pulse penetrates the brain and comes in contact with the neurons, matter, that little pulse of electricity occurs, and that's what wakes up the brain. It gets those neurons talking to each other. Sometimes it's confused with ECT, which is electroconvulsive therapy. That is a different science. It's still a very effective treatment for depression, especially refractory depression. But that is like a hurricane to the whole brain. It's electricity that is administered to the brain, causing the brain to go into seizure and then waking it up that way. TMS is based on magnetic pulses that then create that little pulse of electricity in a very targeted area, about the size of a quarter on the left frontal part of the brain. And it's cumulative. It's not a quick fix. It happens cumulatively as those outer neurons under the skull wake up. Then with daily treatment, it then starts going deeper and deeper and waking up neurons further and further in the brain, down as far as the amygdala and the hippocampus.
Wow. Well, you just said daily. that sounds like a lot.
Well, initially it is. I'll be honest with you. It's 5 days a week for a full course. The initial course is 5 days a week for 4 to 6 weeks because it's cumulative. You know, as those outer neurons wake up, then they start waking up their neighbor neurons deeper and deeper in the brain. However, once the full course is accomplished, the patient will either have full remission, which means their depression is lifted completely, or they will get a response, which means they feel somewhat better, certainly better than when they started. It isn't a quick fix, but it is gentle. And it, by the way, the treatment can be done in as short a time as 20 minutes to 37 and a half minutes. And quite frankly, it takes longer to get a mani-pedi a manicure pedicure than it does to do this treatment. You can I drove myself back and forth. There's no side effect like, oh, I feel dizzy or nauseous afterwards. I had to go quite a distance to get to my treatment, which is about an hour away. Now there are, that was 10 years ago. Now there are TMS practices all over the country. I think there are over 800 of them at this point.
Do you need a referral?
Yes, it need you. There is a prescription that is written by a doctor or anyone who can write a prescription. But that's what's required. And then the insurance is covering it. The insurance used to be an obstacle to getting treatment. Every state in the country now has at least one insurance company that is covering it based on medical necessity. And of course, with the prescription that we were just talking about.
Did you personally feel the effects, some positive effects right away?
I think it took me after my 19th treatment. I woke up on a Saturday morning, and because I had to go such a long distance, my first thought when I woke up was, something's missing. Oh, I don't have to drive an hour at Hartford today. But then I realized, oh no, the light in the room looked different. The air was clear. The colors in the room were brighter. And what I realized what was missing was that disgusting feeling that with severe depression, when you wake up in the morning and you wish you were dead, it is the most disgusting. All I can do tell you is it's just like if you had the worst job in the world that you hated with a boss who treated you, you know, horribly, and it was Monday morning and you had to get out of bed and go face all that. That's the disgusting feeling I'm talking about. And it's a sinking feeling and it's a hopeless feeling. And on that Saturday morning when I realized, oh, I don't have to go up to Hartford today because it's Saturday, I realized, oh, I think this is what they're talking about, the lift, the TMS lift. It was a feeling of lightness. It wasn't like I'm going to go out and set the world on fire. And it's a very, very subtle but unmistakable recognition that there is relief. And for example, there was no marching band coming through my bedroom that morning. The angels did not open the heavens and start singing hallelujah. It was very quiet. As a matter of fact, I got out of bed. I went to the mirror and looked at myself and I still looked horrible. But I didn't want to jinx it. So I went out to the kitchen where my husband was having a cup of coffee. I said, I almost didn't want to say, I think this is really working. I had the FUD factor, the fear, uncertainty, and doubt. And that is what kind of kept me to just say, stay quiet about this. But it was working.
We've all had that whole feeling of, I don't want to jinx it. Things are going too good. If I acknowledge it, it'll evaporate.
Exactly.
So were the treatments themselves uncomfortable?
Well, I didn't think so. I have to say, Sherry, it was so surprising and such a relief to find out how easy TMS treatments are. There is a pulsing. The pulsing is MRI strength pulses. So it feels like a noogie. Like if you have a brother who used to give you a noogie on your head, okay, it feels like a noogie. It's a very startling and very sharp pulse, like a woodpecker. And it's a very specific spot. It's not your whole head. It took me about a week to get used to it. Now, granted, when one is very depressed, anything physical is magnified. A foot rub, which normally would feel so wonderful, will be irritating to someone with depression. At least it was for me. And so after about a week, I got used to the tapping, and I like it. I mean, even though it's you feel it. I mean, it's like I said, it's a noogie, but I know it's helping me. It's almost like when someone's giving you a back rub or a foot rub, and it's really intense. And but in the meantime, you go, yeah, but it's feeling really good, you know, because I'm getting my foot rubbed. So it's that kind of a feeling. Now, some people will complain of there are no side effects, by the way. The only side effect that I have heard patients remark about is the pain at the site, you know, with the tapping, getting used to that. Sometimes people have said they have a headache afterwards. I did not experience that. And I also attribute headache maybe to the stress and the anxiety of when I first went, it was like, oh, I'm going to get my brain zapped. And I was a nervous wreck about it. I had high anxiety, but it is just, it, it, it's so amazingly easy, and it's very calming. I sit in the chair. It's like a spa chair, and I watch TV, and the pulsing happens, and it's on and off. It pulses for 4 seconds, and then it's off for 26 seconds. And then the computer that is delivering the pulses goes, bling, like you've got mail. It pulses for 4 seconds, like that. And then it stops and it takes a break. And so it's intermittent like that, which makes it a lot easier. And like I said, I had the distraction of watching television. I chose to watch the Travel Channel. For me, it was just take me to Greece. Let me be distracted about thinking about Italy or, you know, someplace far away. But other people, they want silence. Some people listen to music. You do have to stay awake. They do not want you to fall asleep because the brain is being stimulated. And so when you go to sleep, the brain is working against that stimulation. So that's the only thing. And that you have, there's a treater there with you every day, watching, monitoring, making sure that it's, you know, you're not falling asleep or you're not in distress in any way. For example, you might need to have a sip of water or something. You know, they're there for you.
What about your medications? Did you keep taking them?
No, well, I did not. Some people do, but I had become so frustrated, and the side effects of the ones that supposedly were working were so intolerable for me that I stopped taking them. I do not recommend that. I didn't do a good thing by taking myself off medications. But most patients, even when they start TMS, if they continue their medications, we'll find that they are either reduced considerably or eliminated altogether.
So are you going now? Do you go for like refreshers?
Yeah, they call them boosters. Then they call them maintenance, but the insurance company didn't like the word maintenance. So what we call them now is relapse prevention. And my first year, now I had my 10-year anniversary from when I first started my initial course. It, back in May was my 10-year anniversary. The first year I finished in June sometime. The holidays were coming up, and I thought, oh, what if it comes back? What if I get depressed again? So my treater and my doctor both said, just come for a single booster. So I did that in around Thanksgiving, and then I think I did another one by the end of the year. My second year, I may have done 3 or 4 booster relapse prevention treatments. Now I've been doing this for so long that I recognize my symptoms. I mean, I'm constantly looking over my psychological shoulder, knowing that I have a chronic illness and that my depression is going to resurface if I don't take care of myself. And I have a list of things that I abide by to manage my depression, because it isn't just, you know, getting this quick, you know, getting TMS, but it's many things. But in the meantime, I know my symptoms now. So when they come up, I know, and they're lasting for more than a week or two, I get on the phone, I make an appointment, and I go for a treatment. Sometimes my doctor will say, well, you know what, you don't sound that great. Maybe you should do 3 this week, or maybe you do 1 this week, 1 next week. But now my pattern seems to be every 4 to 6 weeks, I go for 1 treatment. It's almost like riding a surfer riding a surfboard, and you want to just stay on top of that wave. You don't want the surfboard to crash under and take you down with the surfboard and the wave. So it's really just trying to stay on top of that wave like a smart surfer.
Yeah, no, that's a beautiful analogy. For me, it's I go to a chiropractor, and I used to go when I needed an adjustment, and now I go so that I don't need an adjustment.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
just to kind of stay ahead of the wave. You said you do other things to help you manage, and I realize that these are individual specific things, but are they things like watching what you eat and self care, or what?
I don't drink alcohol. That alcohol is a depressant. I make sure that I try to eat healthy. Sometimes it's not easy, but I try to eat a well-balanced diet and you know, take nutrients. I also really, really try to stay away from stressful situations and from toxic people. People who are, who you just know in your heart when you're with them that they're taking you down. You know that they're as much as you feel like, oh, I've known this person for so long, and I can't give up on this friendship, but this friendship has become toxic and a negative force in your life. Then you have to look at it as a self-preservation tactic. The other thing that I do is meditation. And I find that to be extremely helpful in keeping me balanced. And just trying to think my other tactics, but it's really just about making sure that I don't overdo it in any way, emotionally, physically, mentally, socially. You know, knowing when to say, I think I need to be by myself today. And that's different from isolation, which depressed people, that's a no-no for really depressed people, is isolating. So knowing the difference between needing some time alone and isolating is really an important thing to watch out for.
Those are all fabulous suggestions for people who might not have any sort of ailments. You know, it really, it's a preventative. It's, there's nothing to argue with about what you've just suggested. Do you worry that other people who become aware of your past, including a suicide attempt, which you're very open about, that they look at you and think you could go off the rails at any time?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think my family worries, which breaks my heart that I caused them that concern, especially with my husband. Honestly, the fact that I wrote a book about it and it's out there, I guess I can't really feel too embarrassed. I'm not. I mean, let me tell you, I'm not proud of what I did. Taking 28 Xanax and 3 slugs of vodka is not a happy thing to disclose to people. And I was worried in the beginning. I was most worried about family, people I was close with, that they wouldn't understand, when in fact they could not have been more compassionate and supportive and loving. So hiding that light under a basket is not a smart thing to do. And but I will tell you this, when I wrote the book and pushed the send button to the publisher, I all of a sudden thought, oh, this must be what gay people feel when they're coming out. This must be what it's like to come out.
Mm-hmm. Reveal yourself
in terms of your sexuality. I revealed myself in terms of my mental health, and I will tell you, it was scary. It was scary, but the reason I did it was because when I got relief from TMS, and people were going, "Wow, what did you do?" And I would say, "Oh, I did TMS." Well, what's that? And I was trying to describe it. I mean, I was still a newbie at it myself. But I realized, people need to know about this. People, the world needs to know that this exists. It was only FDA cleared in October of 2008. I started my treatment in May of 2010. So there, and quite frankly, I didn't think it would take this long for it to really become well known. And it still isn't, which is why I'm happy that you're having me on your podcast, because I take every opportunity, and it's not just about me. It's just about making sure that people understand that there are options, that there are to traditional therapies. And furthermore, that they're just tools. None of them are a cure for a chronic illness. There's no cure for diabetes. There's no cure for hypertension. You have to find your tool and use it. And I found my tool in TMS. But if my tool was medications, I would be saying, that's my tool, I'm going to use it. Because a person with a chronic illness has to own it. You have to own it. It has to be something that you do for yourself, because no one can do this for you. I don't think so, anyway. And it's hard. Sometimes you feel so alone, and so I feel so alone and so so hopeless that, you know, owning it is like, can't I just not have to own this thing? Can't I just, you know, crawl into bed and not come out again, kind of a thing. But then again, well, I got my tool, I better go use it. And if it's, ECT, then a person, if they discover that that's the tool that will help them, go for it.
And ECT, to remind everyone, is the electromagnetic version.
Yes, it's electroconvulsive therapy. It throws the brain into a seizure, as opposed to TMS, which delivers that magnetic pulse to create that little spark of electricity. Everything is about waking the brain up so that it will do its job. That's the whole point.
So let's talk to the people who are listening who aren't personally affected. It's not them. It's someone that they love. Mm. Is there any advice you could give to them that would be of benefit?
Oh, that's a hard one, because, you know, you can lead the horse to water, but you can't make him drink, kind of a thing. You have to love. You have to love that person. And they may be the most difficult, depressed person on the planet, but you can't fix them. And trying to fix them, it just is like throwing gasoline on a fire. So you have to just love them and be gentle but firm. Gentle but firm. And offer avenues, offer support, offer information, offer reassurance. Because when I was depressed and so hopeless, I didn't think there was any way out. I will tell you, the first line of my book is, it was the easiest decision I ever made. Committing suicide is a very, very easy decision. And undiagnosed depression, specifically treatment-resistant depression, is a slippery slope. And I'll tell you right now, it's a dangerous, dangerous condition that anybody, and if someone has a loved one who's even hinting at suicide, or I don't think I'm worthy to be here, or they start having the self-recriminating conversations, they need to be paid attention to. They need to be paid attention to. That it should never be ignored. And I don't mean overreacting, like, oh my God, my sister's going to commit suicide. No, it's gentle, firm, loving support. That's the answer that I would give.
Martha, tell us about your life today.
Well, I'm getting older, so that has a lot to do with my life today. I retired, after my crisis, I kind of was forced to retire. I have three wonderful grandchildren and a husband of 44 years who, quite frankly, is in line for sainthood in my book. We have a little shelter. They got me a dog 10 years ago because I couldn't get out of bed after my crisis. And they thought, well, let's get mom a dog because there's no snooze button on a dog. So she'll have to get out of bed to walk the dog. So we still have Josie. We still have our little shelter, you know, rescue dog. And I do a lot of, I do speaking, things like this. I do a lot of phone work with patients who can find me through my website, and they'll contact me and want to chat and find out more about what this is. And So I always tell them I'm not a healthcare professional. I'm just one of them, but I do my best to share my experience and how I handled it, and hope that they can glean some reassurance and some information and confidence to proceed with finding their tool.
Martha, thank you.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
That's our segment for today. Thank you for sharing your magnificence with us. I'm Sherry Clark from Fork in the Road, and I hope to see you again soon.